You're listening to What the SaaS, the Future of FinTech, a podcast hosted by Paul Josephak, the CEO and co-founder of Receive. On the show, Paul speaks with industry leaders and experts on the many topics surrounding digitalization, innovation, and the future of FinTech. We'll share ideas and solutions that can help companies and their customers get the best experience possible and help them win back the modern world of finance. So let's jump into the show. Paul, take it away.
All right. Hi, I'm Paul Josephak, CEO and founder of Receive, and I'm actually sitting here together with Michael Buckus, our CTO and also my co-founder and partner in crime for close to 10 years at this point. We decided to do a little bit of a different type of a podcast today. We're trying to come up with a good name. We like the topic or the concept of Between Two Ferns, since we're sitting right next to the main train station here in Hamburg. I guess this could be called Between Two Tracks. I think track one and track two are right below us. Who knows? We'll come up with a witty name when we post this, I'm sure. We'll see what our podcast guy, Zach, pulls out. Anyway, the goal of this is to give a little bit of a background on us, on Receive. I think we've done this kind of a pitch or this discussion with tons of our customers, definitely with all of our investors, giving the background on how we came to actually deciding to start Receive and what we've done in the past. So I would almost say that a little bit of the history is necessary, how Michael and I got our start. And I'll take it even further back in the sense of how I met Michael. And we were actually introduced by a mutual friend, an American guy that was living in, I believe, Holland at the time, right, Mike?
Yeah.
And he basically saw both of us at Le Web, which was kind of, I guess, the predecessor to what now is Web Summit in Europe. It used to happen in Paris every year. It was pretty much where all the VCs and startups would show up. And we were introduced there to one another as, hey, you two Americans, meet one another. I think that's how the intro was made. And then we ended up almost losing touch in the sense that we had just been briefly introduced there. And then I guess, what was it, 4 years later, Michael, then you moved to Hamburg?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And Michael actually passed by me on the street. Being Michael, and as Michael is, he recognized me. Being me and as I am, I had no clue who he was. He remembered my name. I had no clue who he was. But we struck up a conversation. It turned out that he was working at a venture fund right around the corner. I happened to be at Neuhaus Partners at the time. And then we ended up deciding to meet up and drink a couple beers and catch up on what each of us had been doing. Fast forward a little bit, and both of us were deciding what to do next with our lives. I was leaving Neuhaus Partners at the time. Michael was, I think, you were already at the Otto Group when this kind of whole discussion of do we start a company together.
Yeah, it was kind of in that phase, just to kind of find something to do. I went over to the CFO at the Otto Group at the time, and then was kind of given the whole, hey, how do we start new stuff? Was kind of the mandate.
Yeah, but that's what my recollection was, that you were trying to figure out, do I stay with the Otto Group or do I go do something else? I, at the time, had already known that I was leaving Neuhaus Partners. I knew I was there till the end of 2011, I believe it was at the time. And you and I, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, we decided to actually think about a startup. It wasn't anything to do with innovation at the time. It was all about launching something similar to Bank Simple.
Yeah.
And at the time, Bank Simple was kind of a high-flying, I guess, early fintech at the time in the U.S. They ultimately ended up rebranding to Simple. They sold the whole thing to BBVA,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
We were looking at doing something similar in Europe, so I guess we would have been a good couple of years ahead of like an N26 or some of those players. Anyway, long story short, many things happened. We don't need to go into all those details. We ended up launching the innovation arm for the Otto Group together. We were running it as if we were co-founders in a startup, i.e. I played, I guess, the CEO role, Michael, the CTO role. We've always been working super close together. The titles were almost irrelevant. We live by the motto of 1 + 1 = 4. I think we actually are extremely complementary to one another. And ultimately, one of the things that we did at the Otto Group is start a business called Collect AI. I mean, Michael, maybe you give the background on that, because you were talking to AOS quite a bit even before I joined. So maybe give kind of the thoughts of how we came to do Collect AI.
Yeah, so we, I suppose the background on that is that AOS, one of the larger incumbents in the industry in terms of collections and whatnot, we were attached very closely to them. We were doing a bunch of fintech related things, and so therefore we had a lot of contact there.
Well, just to clarify, our initial mandate was to do new innovations for AOS.
Right, yeah. And so anything touching financial services. And what ended up kind of happening was we saw, at least in the U.S. with TrueAccord, the fact that you could potentially go after the whole space a little bit differently. Now, granted, they had a little bit of a different take on it in terms of, I think now it's called humanistic approach and things like that. And so we started looking at kind of the, could this be done differently? I guess is a good way of putting it. And so one of the things that we looked at was, well, there were a bunch of, call it, smaller companies, things like that out there, traditional long tail and whatnot. And those people were underserved, I suppose. So very fragmented, call it supplier market, so tens of thousands of providers, everything from law firms up to the incumbents like the AOSs and Intrums and what those players. And you basically then had a bunch of, you could even be of a decent size. We actually had like Credit Tech here in town. They were pretty well funded. They had a lot of loan volume and things like that. And even they had a difficult time actually selecting a partner in the space. And so because of that, we looked at, well, could we actually bundle these things together? Could we actually put something kind of lightweight as a tech-related solution in front?
Well, let me just throw in. I mean, the most important thing is Credit Tech came to us because we knew them. Mm-hmm. And then we brought them to AOS, and AOS basically just blew them off.
Yeah, of course.
They didn't care about small customers.
Yeah, and they weren't really that small at the time. That was, yeah, it was part of the problem.
Could have actually been a very useful partnership.
And so we said, well, there's, you know, all of these small ones, they just need a fairly simple, lightweight solution, and all of that can technically be bundled and made more attractive to, let's say, the in-house player that we had that we were attached to. And so that was kind of the entry point into starting to, I suppose, diving right in to see how could we actually change some things. And that was kind of the background as to why we then started that particular company there.
So, I mean, just to kind of, again, jump another couple of years forward, you and I ended up leaving the Otto Group for various reasons and decided to actually start Receive. And I think one of the kind of most important aspects of why we decided to start Receive is that we had learned so much of what not to do with Collect AI. I think that strategy and the approach to the market of Collect AI was flawed. And one of my initial kind of recollections of what we wanted to do with Receive is that we kept hearing what AOS and Intrum and Lowell and all the large players were ultimately doing in the market. It wasn't necessarily visible until you became an insider in the space. And the goal with Receive was to go after the whole value chain. And that's what ultimately led to us starting Receive, because we said, being attached to one of these large DCAs, the debt collections agencies, wasn't really what we wanted to do. We didn't want to be a DCA. We also realized that our opportunity in the market was always around technology and software. It was the only way to scale. And there was a huge gap in the market because there is a ton of technology out there. I actually just had a conversation with this with our head of marketing yesterday, where the discussion circled around the fact that a lot of what we do, what we ultimately want to do, could technically be cobbled together by providers who are out there, but none of them are addressing in any way the segment we're in. Mm-hmm. And no one actually even understands the segment or brings the domain expertise to the table, which we had acquired over the years, as well as bringing in people into our team who know what they're doing. Again, I still think we definitely are going after a very specific part of the market that isn't being addressed. Now, with the evolution of our strategy and kind of what we want to be as a business down the road, has also evolved after having launched the business. What would you kind of define as Receive's mandate today, without, you know, necessarily looking backwards, but looking forward?
So for me personally, it was always kind of geared around the how do we change fundamentally how debt functions, and be maybe a little more specific, like kind of the back office of everything. So how do all these processes work? Right now you have either a bunch of cobbled together stuff, so you could go get something that sends a piece of communication to somebody. Yeah, sure, you can go get a provider for that. Yeah, you can go get a classical piece of collections software on-prem, and okay, you can have call center agents work on that stuff. And then you could spend unlimited amounts of money trying to actually glue all of these things together. Then you have the whole issue, or I suppose part of it, where you're then trying to find service providers to actually then do the actual outsourcing component of it, if you want to pursue that as a strategy. Then you have everything that comes on the tail end of the process of what do you do once something's really, truly not performing anymore. How do you, as let's say a bank, get it off the balance sheet, get it out the door, and. So, okay, there's a whole another slew of processes that happen. Then there's everybody else that's on the other side of that transaction in whatever form it takes, that's then going through the same set of stuff with the same set of cobbled together kind of solutions. And that just, personally for me, is just insane. So yeah. Like why? And
well, even take a look back. Sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I mean, think about what we saw over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. For me, it was an evolution as a founder or as even a manager in the space to really see how organizations are addressing their collections problems, or let's actually be honest, not addressing their collections problems over the last 10 years. You have these departments that are made up of a lot of headcount, so you have extremely high costs in connection with people. You also have extremely ineffective processes. I still, again, to use the same term, I find it utterly insane that in 2021, the main driver of collections is still sending out letters in some geographies, right? Yeah. And then maybe sending out emails in an absolute, you know, outlier case, sending SMSs or using other channels like WhatsApp or whatnot. It feels like the industry is so far behind in terms of what's out there. And you brought up the right terminology. It's cobbled together. There is technology available, but all of the customers we end up seeing, they're putting so many different pieces of the pie together via multiple departments, via multiple processes, yet ultimately it's all addressing the debt or the collections or whatever you want to call it, be it in-house at the enterprise or be it externally when dealing with investors who are purchasing that debt as portfolios, or even obviously whoever is then putting those portfolios out for servicing to the DCAs in the market. And it just doesn't make any sense that no one has actually unified the technology of this. And if you remember, think back to AOS. When we were basically encountering how many different IT backends that they had with every country they went to, they bought someone there, and ultimately they had 40 different IT backends. I definitely don't want to be, you know, the CTO of AOS trying to keep those systems working. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely the right point to make. And I also, one of the other things that I'm also a little bit surprised by is the fact that there's such a lack of cloud, right? Everyone is still doing everything on-prem, which means not only do you have a ton of headcount to do your collections, you also have to have all of IT involved mm-hmm. in this. And these systems are, when they're cobbled together, are so complex and so difficult to maintain. And if you need to change anything, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, at some point, I mean, historically, kind of speaking, it was called control was delegated to somebody else, or mm-hmm. you gave up control, or you never had it, depending on where you're at. So you either gave up control to the IT department to then say, well, I can't change anything, so unless I get IT involved, and that's going to take a year or something, and maybe my part of the process isn't considered as fancy as online marketing or something else, so therefore I'm not going to get allocated the developers to kind of do the things that I need to do. Or you give up control and you just say, I'm going to farm it out to a DCA because I just don't have the capacity, either technologically or whatever, to actually do the job. You're always delegating the control or giving up control to somebody. And that's the when you're responsible for something and then you have no actual control over it, that's a highly frustrating kind of setup to be in. And that's the even if you go and look at most of the stuff that's out there, that when they say, hey, they put it in the cloud, is kind of the way I would describe it. It's the, sure, you have the same software that was running in your basement is just being put on a server somewhere else, but it actually fundamentally didn't change.
It also didn't change the way you actually approach it, because one of the things, I had a call yesterday with a very large Iberian bank and their head of innovation. And the discussion we ended up having after we showed him what our product does, he says, like, this is very much more like MarTech than some marketing technology than a typical type of fintech approach to things. And I'm like, well, look, that was also part of our initial impetus of building the product the way it is. That if you think, I mean, not even MarTech, but think of a Facebook. I always use this analogy. So if you take a Facebook, which has billions of impressions on their news feed or whatever the feed that you're looking at, they can try out so many things and get almost real-time feedback on what works. They can try 5 things out, throw it on the feed, and with billions of impressions, you really, within 20 minutes, already know exactly what's going to work and what's not going to work by serving it out to everyone who's using Facebook. I think that's something that no one's really been thinking about in connection with collections and thinking about the strategies that you're pursuing, right?
Well, if you never had the ability to control that stuff.
Well, that's, again, I'm just turning a circle back. You need to also be able to control it to be able to do that.
And if you never had kind of the tools to allow you to actually run the experiments or actually find out what works best in a very quick and efficient manner, then status quo just reigns, which is just leave it as is and don't touch it, because why would I touch it? I don't have the expertise. I don't have the people. And it is valid to say that somebody looks at something, part of what we do, and then says, well, yeah, it looks a lot like the stuff that the marketing people are doing. Well, of course, they're also trying to communicate with other people on the outside and also trying to get somebody to kind of move to actually, you know, buy something from you or whatever, or sign up for the loan or whatever it is. Why shouldn't you have that same ability when you're in a much more difficult situation of trying to actually find out what's wrong and or get the person to kind of move to at least get to some kind of solution?
The realization yesterday from this guy that I talked to, he's like, wait, we could take all this information and let this flow back to marketing.
Of course.
And we can just plug in all the technology we have running on that end and profit from what data or information is flowing out of our collections processes.
Right. And so that's something that then is initially for people usually probably a little bit more abstract. Like we'll point out, this data becomes immediately accessible for you to use throughout the organization in order to make the decision. Do I offer these next 10,000 loans in that scoring class? Or do I allow these transactions? I can drive top line revenue or bottom line kind of results because I know what's going on in the inner workings of the machinery. Or the call it the simple cases where we're not talking about the risk department or any of those folks that are using the data. The simple reality that you have a collections team sitting at extension 12 and the support team sitting at extension 3, they're in 2 completely different parts of the organization, yet if somebody calls the collections team, says, hey, I'm having this particular issue, or it's getting logged in a system that's completely separate from the other group. And so then if they call the other phone number 2 days later, those people have no idea that they just spoke with somebody in the collections team to actually restructure the loan or whatever the case may be. By using Receive, we actually have it that most of the folks are now realizing, well, wait a second, the support people can have just as much access to the information as the actual collections team and or potentially vice versa. That makes the random call to the support team much easier to deal with because they actually know, oh, the person's in a little bit of a difficult situation and this is the resolution path that they've picked or whatever it is. And it's like use cases like that are then enabled by us where they didn't have it before.
There's also going to be, I mean, obviously this is one of the things that we didn't obviously know when starting the company, but now it's the reality we live in with COVID. I mean, if you really think about what's going to be happening, especially to financial institutions in the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years, again, it keeps getting kicked down the road, and the can literally keeps getting kicked down the road because the subsidies and government kind of involvement keeps getting extended which is, I guess, good for the market. But if you really think about it, we all know what the harsh reality is that you're going to have these non-performing loans exploding at the banks. I mean, everyone's writing about it. Everyone knows it's coming. It's just a matter of when. And I think that a lot of the players in the market aren't necessarily right now thinking about that, or they might be thinking about it, but they're definitely not reacting fast enough. We're seeing that also with our customers who sometimes are just delaying addressing the problem, even though they know today they should be doing something, but they're just focusing on other things. And again, I always bring up what you just said. You can get so much more value out of the whole process than just thinking about purely collections. What about the other end, Michael? I mean, that's one of the things that I find almost a little bit more difficult to explain to people is kind of, if you think where collections starts, and let's say it's days past due, 1 to 30, 1 to 60, 1 to 90. Mm-hmm. But let's think about the other end of that equation. So when the organization, i.e. the originator or the enterprise, knows they won't be able to collect, or they decide that they don't want to have the cost of collections anymore, and they want to get rid of that claim, or let's say that portfolio of claims, where's the disconnect there? I mean, I see it in the sense that even within the enterprise, those are two separate groups usually. Mm-hmm. But there's also obviously a disconnect to external third parties, be it the investors, the DCAs, and whatnot. Talk about that a little bit, kind of how we're going after that.
So that's also a little bit of, I guess I would call it a cobbled together set of solutions traditionally. So a couple different aspects to it. The one is typically the cobbling together of the setup leading towards the tail end results in the fact that if you want to actually cleanly even just transfer the information to somebody, it's not really that easy to do, or you're cobbling together another set of solutions in order to actually do the data transfer. So you already have a lot of time invested or work that needs to be invested in order to do that. What a lot of people do is then they put headcount on it. So they'll put analysts on it, things like that here, spend a bunch of time going and getting the data together, trying to sort it out in Excel models or just dumping it into spreadsheets and saying, what are we going to do with this, left or right, up or down? And then you have, call it the commercial side of it as well, where then somebody's actually going and trying to find the partners that they actually want to work with, trying to negotiate some kind of price, and so you end up having all these hurdles, technologically, procedural, and, which then kind of again goes towards, well, whatever deal you can kind of get from some partner that you kind of halfway maybe trust, I guess is a good way of putting it, that becomes your status quo.
Yep.
And then you spend the amount of time required to cobble together the thing to transfer the data over to whoever that party is, and then that's it. Then now you're kind of done. And if you look at then kind of the larger banks and the larger portfolios, they'll have teams dedicated that are then doing all this work to then figure out, well, maybe we can try to figure out some kind of better price or put it up for auction. That ends up just opening a data room. The other players then get their people and analysts to go and download the data. They put it into their spreadsheets. They circulate it between 30 different people or whatever and hope that people don't overwrite the data in the spreadsheet. That then gets sent back. Then they make a bid on the thing. And then, voila, the data gets transferred at that point to then get rid of the portfolio. But you still had all these people and all these just manual processes or whatever involved in it. If you streamline it and head it towards package everything together according to, let's say, in Europe, the securitization standards and whatnot, it makes your life a lot easier. The data's in receive, for example. That means all that stuff can be packaged together, and then now you actually can do the business-related thing of which partner is actually going to give me the best offer or the best terms on this, because I've already got everything prepared in the standardized way that then reduces all those hurdles.
Well, what you're pretty much doing is creating a new market, right? I
mean, you're allowing something that was basically a who do you know, who's sitting at the table kind of intransparent market. Mm-hmm. You open the door to say, look, I can turn around and now I can allow more people to participate, or I can go to other players. I have just more options.
Yeah. And again, that transparency and creating those portfolios that even could potentially be securitized leads to an asset class that becomes tradable, that right now is only tradable with extensive amounts of manual labor, tons of disparate processes, cobbled together IT systems, a lot of kind of who you know more than anything else as part of the process. So if I kind of summarize a little bit of what we're trying to do, it's literally to address the whole value chain of a claim, i.e. resolve that claim as best we can early in the process, because the most value can be delivered by actually getting someone to pay an unpaid bill or an unpaid debt. But if that claim isn't resolved in the early stages, to make sure that that claim is moved through the process of collections and all the various stages of collections as frictionlessly as possible with an underlying technology layer versus doing all of this in Excel with a ton of analysts or whatnot involved. At the tail end, what happens then? So what's kind of the end game, or where does this all stop? Where do we stop?
Ooh, I suppose I would say we stop at whatever the ultimate destination or final endpoint of a particular loan or credit or piece of debt or whatever it is, be it that it gets restructured at the tail end and then gets kind of paid off. Maybe it's one of those things where it can't be for whatever reason, and then it gets written off towards the tail end. That kind of situation can happen as well. But getting it into receive, and then if you are in the later stages of it and having it managed inside the platform, allows you to kind of take that standardized thing and move it around to be able to increase the called outcomes or the resolution of everything. So you even have the instance of, let's say, an investor goes in, they buy the portfolio, they still have to get somebody to do the actual day in, day out work. Now, in all that work that we talked about, where it's packaging it up and then data transferring and whatnot, the people who bought the portfolio are having to do that same work with every single partner that they're working with. And by then saying, no, you have a standardized packet and that packet exists to be moved around, that changes the dynamic quite a bit, because then you're not locked into one particular partner. You can actually say, wait, this partner is doing a terrible job, whatever that means for you, and then you pick it up and you move it from them to the other one. And by doing that, it gives you just a lot of, let's say, flexibility. It creates a lot of transparency around what's going on. And ultimately, we stop once basically, I suppose, everything is running through receive end to end. I suppose that would be a natural stopping point.
I mean, for me, the vision, and maybe this is what a lot of people might be kind of asking themselves, the vision for me ultimately is to be an underlying technology. Mm-hmm. There's going to be businesses, there's going to be people, there's going to be consultants involved that can technically implement the receive technology and work on top of it. Mm-hmm. What are we replacing? I mean, we're basically replacing these outdated systems that were never built to scale in the direction that they ultimately needed to scale. They were maybe optimal 15, even 10 years ago for what customers of such players were seeking. And I also think, I mean, again, this is a typical innovator's dilemma problem, that the incumbent, even technology players, at this point, they can't shift into the new market because they don't have that expertise. They'd have to quasi-kill some of their cash cows. Their businesses are set up to make the majority of their money on implementation. It's also one of the reasons that all the customers end up getting hosed, because they buy a technology and then are paying through the nose for all the updates and changes and requests that are made down the road. So you never really understand upfront your total cost of ownership for what you buy. And again, I think also one of the realities that has changed, this is another conversation I recently had, is that with a receive, you can start with what solves your immediate pain point and then back into more and more of the platform versus having to buy this huge, quasi, almost outdated solution for the problem that you have at hand.
Yeah, to follow on that, it's why would you rip everything out and replace it over the course of, I mean, most of these things are multi-year projects at the end if they're big enough. Why would you do that when you can start and more or less 4-6 weeks later, get up and running with the piece that you need, and then have a reduced business risk, et cetera, by then kind of casually moving into the rest of it.
Let me just look at it. I mean, it's the same way I think about it as a CEO of this company. I don't want to buy any technology that's going to take me months to get up and running. Mm-hmm. And if I'm, you know, putting myself in the shoes of, you know, even what we were doing back at Otto as management, when you think about implementing something that's going to require third-party IT, I mean, just think back to how we ran Liquid Labs, right? Mm-hmm. We never had anything connected to Otto because, God forbid, we were attached to their IT. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, nothing against IT. That's not the point. It's just the fact that we completely were responsible for our own IT destiny because we ran our own systems. We basically put together what we needed. Mm-hmm. We were using what was available in the market off the shelf. It was mostly cloud. I mean, even then, I mean, thinking 10 years back, I think almost everything we used was, we were primarily in the cloud with everything we had.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there's a shift now generally to, even in large enterprises, to departments picking their own technology, having that technology maintained by the external third party and not by a central IT. When they want to make changes, those have to be there immediately. I mean, at the latest, the next day. Because if you think about it, one of our customers sending stuff, you know, elsewhere and getting it back 6 weeks later as something that they needed is utterly insane in 2021 with the speed of business. Mm-hmm. Think about it. If you're changing your strategy in the collections and you realize that something's not working and then taking at least 6, if not even more, weeks for you to adapt, just think about the loss in terms of collections revenues that you could have generated. It just, again, still, it always baffles my mind and it continues to baffle my mind. One other kind of last thing to almost wind this up, because I know Zach is getting nervous about how much time this is taking. When it comes to the business and where we're going internationally, I mean, one of the things that people will probably see with us from the outside is that we're quite active in Iberia and LATAM right now. Obviously, we started out as a European player, but we've now also very quickly expanded out to LATAM primarily. What's your thinking there? Kind of, are those going to be the main target areas for the next couple of years, or are we going to be spreading out even to maybe Southeast Asia, which we had looked at a little bit, a year and a half ago? What do you see happening there?
So I think we'll have maybe a couple of different fronts that are kind of going on at the same time. The one is if I look at the originator or kind of the operational side, that one I see that we'll have much more rapid kind of on top of what we already have, internationalization. So the South American markets and Central American markets, those will function a little bit differently than, let's say, the European markets in terms of payment behaviors, things like that. They have a little bit of a different starting point, depending on the country. You may not send letters, for example, where you might do it here. So there's a little bit of nuanced stuff there. But from a technological, operational standpoint, we can go pretty much anywhere on the planet at this stage very quickly in the course of days. So we don't really worry about those kind of aspects in terms of, let's say, the scaling aspect. The Southeast Asia probably will, I would say, maybe follow, is a little bit of a different environment, being a little bit more mobile first. Mm-hmm. in that sense. So the...
And much higher credit card or credit penetration.
Yeah, some countries have like the they skipped cards, went to kind of mobile, exactly. And so it's a little bit of a different environment there. So we could very easily flip the switch there as well. Some of the things that people complain about Southeast Asia is it tends to be kind of like data quality and data enrichment and things like that, which we don't necessarily hear from people here in Europe per se as loudly, I suppose. Yeah. But I would say that we, just like when we started the company, that we're not focused on, call it the home market of Germany or anything like that. I mean, when we started, we said we were pan-European right away. And that's just led us to kind of one step to the next, to saying, okay, now we have a higher presence in Spain, Portugal. And that has inevitably led to the fact that the, let's say, countries that speak those languages have then paid attention and now are saying, well, wait a second, if this is working over there, it's going to work over here in these parts of the world as well. So probably, at least for the foreseeable future, we're stronger in the Central South American markets initially, but that doesn't mean that we won't have somebody bite over in Asia and then suddenly we have the same effect over there.
The strategy is always, if you land a large anchor customer, then you can build out around it. I mean, obviously in Spain, we're growing so fast. Since there's multiple customers kind of either already live or going live soon. The exact same thing's happening in Brazil and Mexico right now, so we'll probably set up shop there as well. Again, I think one of the things that obviously translates internationally, this is something that we didn't talk about, but also the way we actually built the technology, right? I mean, not only is it cloud, but we've built it in a way that I hate to use the term dumbed it down, but that ultimately is what it is, that, you know, we can get up and running with someone on the back of CSV files. This is something I always kind of have to reiterate to a potential buyer. We always have a discussion with our customers about implementation. Mm-hmm. The biggest fear in anyone running a collections organization or a department or whatnot is, you know, what's the time, what's the cost, how hard is this going to be, how many resources am I going to need on my end? And it's always kind of a fun conversation because basically we can do things in a matter of weeks if the other side is willing to play along and kind of be just as fast. That's been translating into almost every geography we've gone to. So I think that also is almost one of the arguments of saying, look, if you want to get up and running with us, we can make it work almost wherever you are. And we can deliver fairly quickly ROI on at least pieces of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. We have that, you know, we have customers here in Europe where even regulation is driving them with a need to have something addressed very quickly. So technically we can solve their problem now. And then again, as I said before, back into a much larger implementation. Anything you want to add, Michael, by the way? I've been kind of driving this, but what did we skip? What did we leave out about kind of how we got to where we are?
I don't really know if there was anything that pops to mind right this second that is like a, hey, we missed it. But I probably would reiterate just the fact that the distinction when we speak to people of the fact that we are, I mean, from the technology standpoint, we're cloud native. So we're not just an on-prem solution that was then deployed in AWS or Google or one of those cloud data centers. And we have a much higher degree of flexibility. And the fact that we can take somebody and take probably what they're already exporting as a CSV or something like that for some other system and use that in order to get people up and running. I mean, we have gigabytes, hundreds of gigabytes of data coming via files every day in order to get people up and running as quickly as possible. And then they eventually switch to kind of a deeper integration once they've got the business value has been proven. Therefore, hey, now we're going to upgrade and we're going to step up into more functionality. So that's probably everybody says those kinds of things, but we actually here live by that. So it is true. We can take a very old, we have banks that have gone systems that don't even talk to the internet and gotten them up and running in 4 weeks. So that's probably the one thing I would just kind of harp on.
Well, on that note, without letting this run too long, I mean, let's call this the first episode of Between Two Tracks. I think we have a bunch of interesting stuff coming down the pipe. So we definitely will have some announcements about new products or product features, probably within the next quarter or two. We have also some developments on the company of people who are joining the team and kind of some developments in that aspect or respect. So let's do this again. We'll use this kind of as a way to fairly regularly, irregularly advise you know, whoever's listening to this on what we're doing, what's new, what's relevant. And if people have even questions, let us know what you'd like to hear about. And again, thanks, Michael, and talk to everyone soon.
Bye.